Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm here with Sarah McDewling.
Hello.
And we're very excited to be talking to Candace Fox, who has written Black and Blue and Never Never, with a little guy called, what's his name?
James Penderson?
It's James Penderson.
Penderson?
His friends call him J-Pat.
Patterson. James Patterson. James Patterson's Bookshots is a new series of novellas that have been put out, which are perfect for public transport to knock over in an hour on the way to work. And Candace has written Black and Blue in that series, and in
a
brand new series, a full novel, trade paperback size, Never Never, with James Patterson. So Candace, welcome to Booktopia.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Now, your name is on the cover.
Yes.
Yeah. And we know you from your other crime novels. How did this, what would you call it, co-authored event
happen? Collaboration.
Collaboration.
We stopped collaboration and listened. How did it happen? Well, I was invited to a cocktail party. James was in the country promoting. He'd just written Private Sydney with Catherine Fox, and he'd collaborated with Ed Chatterton on a young adult work. So he was in the country, and I got invited to a cocktail party, and I was just so excited to go because I was a massive James Patterson fangirl.
James Henderson.
You messed me up totally now. At the party itself, I just rushed over there and had to say hello to him. And I had, a few minutes conversation with him because I was very intimidated and I was very worried I was going to say something stupid. and then he got a hold of one of my books. So it was probably someone at my publishing company that just said, here's some reading material for the way home. And he read it on the plane and just really enjoyed it. So I got a call from my publisher maybe a couple of weeks later saying, would you be interested in working with him? And I was like, hell yes.
Yeah. That must have been a great call.
Yeah, it was great. It was so exciting. My husband and I went out that night and just tore it up. We were just so drunk celebrating that one. Yeah.
So can we talk a little bit about your new main character in this series?
Yeah.
Harriet Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Harry,
yeah.
The new hero. I was saying to you before the podcast started that Never Never has a couple of moments in it that were just such prime examples of like heroic kickassery that I had to stop the book to just cheer. Tell us about Harriet and like how much fun she was to write.
Oh, Harriet was so much fun. I mean, she's just a wildcat in herself. And I think she ended up being so feisty and aggressive, partly because at the same time I was writing my own novel for the year, and my character in that, Ted, is very sort of, he's a tall, gentle man. He contemplates a lot, and writing him was like, driving around in an old Cadillac or something. And I would jump over to riding Harry and it'd be like getting on a motorbike, and I would just burst into riding her and she's punching people and she's running around like
swearing.
So my own novel was very dark and broody and then I would just explode into this. She's so much fun. And writing in James Patterson's style with the short chapters, I mean, I don't think there's a chapter in there that's more than 1,000 words. One of our chapters is only one paragraph. So you've got a short amount of time and for her to really make an impact in every chapter. So that was a real treat to write like that.
Is that a thing of James Patterson? Is that a...
Yeah.
Just when you're talking to him, when you're putting this thing together, they pretty much say, we need you to follow this style. For some writers, that might be kind of, how am I getting my head around this?
Yeah. I mean, it's a James Patterson book with my influences and my participation. We didn't want anyone to be under the impression that it was in my style with his influences. Because he works with so many authors all the time, it'd be very difficult for him to learn everyone's style, I think. So, I've been a fan of his since I was a little kid. I've read books of his at a very inappropriate age, and so I was familiar with the style anyway. And that's just how he likes it. He likes the short chapters so that you're in bed and you're just like, I'll just read one more, you know. And with the book shots, it's even faster again. So the way James and I work is we started off with a mini outline, and then we went to sort of a maxi outline that had every single chapter that's in there fully laid out, what was going to happen, what were the major plot points, and sometimes even a bit of the dialogue, you know, Harry says this, somebody says that, you know, all the way through before we even started writing.
Is this like a course in bestseller writing? Like, is this like a hands-on?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Getting that close is amazing.
Yeah, well, he's got those masterclasses online that he does, and he gives you a look at one of the outlines that he wrote for one of his novels, and it's like 8,000 words. And when I read that outline, I was like, oh my God, 8,000 words, that's really, you know, that's really intense as a plan. But it's even more intense when there's two people working on it, because we've both got to have in our minds exactly what happens in that scene that hasn't been written yet. And so our outline for Never Never ended up being 13,000 words.
Wow.
Yeah. And the books themselves are only like 70,000 words. And then so the one we're writing right now, which we haven't named, which is the second book in the series, it was 15,000 words. So it's just huge. By the time you get through the outline, you're like, oh, the book is written. Oh, wait.
That's just the outline.
You've done a lot of writing beforehand. How does that compare with, like, his style compared to the way that you put things, you put books together?
Yeah, well, I don't tend to outline at all, really. I mean, I might just jot down, vaguely what happens next. I certainly don't plan endings at all. Because I like to be surprised by what happens in the end. So it's been a huge learning curve for me. I was really worried that it was going to be boring, I suppose, that I was going to get to the end of the outline and be like, oh, well, I know everything that happens, so, you know, I don't need to write the novel now. But we put the outline together, and then, you know, partway through it, he was like, oh, let's take this out and do this instead. You know, so he's obviously been thinking about it and still questioning, is it the best that it can be? And then about three quarters of the way through, I was like, oh, no, you know, I think we should divert off and do this. I was just telling Sarah before that one of her favorite Kick-Ass scenes just sort of happened spontaneously, and he's totally fine for stuff like that to happen.
And it's my favourite moment.
How do you think it will affect your writing in the future? Because does that make things faster or slower, do you think, the way he does it?
I'm not sure in terms of time. It certainly has helped me in terms of confidence, because as a writer, I have these very frequent moments of just crushing self-doubt that happen every couple of months. So I've had less of those because I'm starting to plan my own work just a little bit more. So I'm self-assured for at least a few months until, you know, I know what happens. I feel more confident as a writer now. I still have those awful moments, but I was talking to somebody the other day about how helpless I feel with all the books I've written, because Eden, for example, I felt terrible the whole time that I was writing that, and I thought, this will be my last book, like this, you know, this is the end of my run, and, you know, just crying and all sorts of stuff. Yeah, yeah, I really hated it. And then it won the Ned Kelly, obviously, last year. And then my book, for the next one that's coming out in 2017, it's called Crimson Lake, and I felt great all the way through writing that. So there's no way that I can judge if my work is any good while I'm writing it, and it's just terrible. It's just terrible. But great. It's a great job. I didn't whinge about it.
Excellent book for us.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah,
can you tell us a little bit about what the whole bookshot thing is?
So the book shots, they're supposed to... What he's trying to do is encourage people who don't usually read to just ease their way into it with something short and exciting. So he says they're kind of... The experience is supposed to be like watching a movie. So they only take 1 to 2 hours to read, and it's just all excitement all the time. They're very intense. And when we were writing the outline for that one, which is only like a 3,000 or 4,000 word outline for that, we were both sitting there like, this is the moment that needs to be more tense, and this one, and this one, and this one, and just really packing it in. So yeah, that was fun to write. We actually wrote that one after Never Never, and it's the case that Harry goes on just before she goes into the outback. So yeah.
So set in Sydney. The other one set in.
Yes. So Black and Blue sit set in Sydney City, and then because of some really terrible news that Harry gets, she's sent out into the outback for Never Never.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, what next? When you do a book like this with James Patterson, does he take you on for a single book, or does he go, we're going to do a series of 10, or how's that work?
Well, I was very cheeky in putting the concept in there. I mean, it's on the back of the book, so it's not that much of a spoiler that Harriet's brother has been accused of, or he's been arrested, really, as Sydney's newest terrible serial killer, and I sort of suggested that concept as a bit of a B plot, because I thought you could spread that concept out over multiple books if you maybe wanted to do them with me. But I wasn't so cheeky as to say, you know, oh, and this is what would happen in book 2 and 3 and 4. But I did the same thing with Hades, my own first book. I just left the door open just a little bit at the end so that you could be satisfied enough by what happens, but there's a little bit of curiosity so that I could say to the publishers, if they ever picked it up, well, you know, that concept goes on and on if you want to keep publishing me.
But those little B plots that you left open are, in both cases, I think, right at the heart of the characters.
Yeah.
So what would Harry be without that going? That's her vulnerability. That's the thing that makes her so relatable.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming, and we'll tiptoe around spoiler territory a bit for people who may not have read the Eden Archer series. But with that series, if Eden didn't have her backstory, I mean,
that's
what made her.
Yeah, exactly. And I like to see these women, Harry and Eden, and they're just facing these traumas. I think traumas that I've experienced in my own life, I've developed so much personally by just facing up to a terrible crisis or facing up to a massive fear, and I think that's even though they weren't very enjoyable, have really brought out amazing things in me. So I like to see that. I like to see characters, any characters, but particularly women, doing that in fiction.
This is the luck that we have here at Booktopia and getting to meet wonderful authors. We've met quite a few crime writers, and all of them seem rather reasonable, composed. Is it because you get out all of your vicious thoughts into page that you're just sort of like, oh, I've done all that, I don't have to get it? Where does this come from? You just seem like a normal human.
Oh, yeah, well, I seem like
I've
that.
I've got hand in my hands for anyone listening to the podcast.
Yeah, people make comments to me like that all the time. When my publisher met me for the first time, I came around the corner and she said, oh, and you're so cute. I'm cute on the outside. But no, I can... Yeah, well, it's something that's very close to the surface with me, because when I was a kid, my dad was a parole officer at Sydney Prison, and he would bring his work stories home to my mum.
I'm glad he didn't bring the work home.
Yeah. And so, like, he was telling, like, terrible stories of murders in the prison and what people had been arrested for and this sort of thing. And then my mum fostered kids as well, and so the cops often would bring the kids, and, you know, I would just overhear my mum in the kitchen talking to the cops, and they're saying, oh, you know, we just got them out of this drug den, there were needles everywhere and all this sort of stuff. And so I'm, you know, she started doing when I was doing foster care when I was about 3, So from that age, I'm hearing these like dark and terrible, awful stories, and I just have so many of them inside. So, and it's very hard not to bring them out sometimes. Like, I was going to a wedding, and we were talking in the car on the way to the wedding, me and a bunch of people, about wedding proposals and how to do it and that. And I said, you know, Ted Bundy proposed to his wife at the trial. And then someone in the car was like, oh, who's Ted Bundy? What did he do? And I was like, well, he used to blah, 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 blah. And then suddenly it just comes out of nowhere, and I'm suddenly right in the middle of this really grisly conversation. So I have to keep it down sometimes, because it's just where my interest is. Like, if you're obsessed with fishing or something, you just want to talk about fishing all the time and tell stories of when you were out fishing and all this. So mine is murder, and so I really want to talk about murder all the time. And sometimes it's just,
and did you have like are there true crime books, or are there murderers out there that you, I mean, I'm not saying your favourite murderer.
Yeah, that's
let's go with the most intriguing.
Most intriguing.
Yeah. Well, it's so hard because I have so many, and it's so hard not to say favourite.
Yeah.
I say that all the time. Oh, my favourite serial killer. And,
I just love him.
No, he's so hot. I mean, I have favourites for different reasons. There are only, because I'm very interested in psychopaths, for example, and when I talk about psychopaths when I'm teaching crime or whatever, crime writing classes, some of the only perfect psychopaths that I've ever read about, the first would be probably Ted Bundy and then O.J. Simpson. And then you talk about Ted Bundy and O.J. Simpson and their characteristics and how they're very similar and all this sort of thing, and just how their brains work as psychopaths. So I find those two guys very intriguing. But for me, with murder, it's just the flavour of the day. Like, I was obsessed with the podcast Serial for a while there. So all I could...
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I know.
Did you like season two as much?
Not as much, no, because no one really got killed.
Do you have other recommendations for true crime podcasts?
Oh, I have so many. Sword and Scale, Someone Knows Something, Real Crime, there's one called Real Crime Podcast. I have so many.
I should be writing this down.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we should record them. Oh, we are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Someone Knows Something is really good. It's a little boy has gone missing 40 years ago, and they try to solve that one. Wow, there are so many.
So you mostly lean in your reading and podcast listening towards true crime.
Yeah, and my TV watching, just, and my conversations, just everything. Like, every now and then my husband has to say, can we watch like a Pixar movie or
Downton Abbey?
Yeah, Downton Abbey, like something, you know, particularly if he's had a long hard
a lot
day
of people
at work.
Dying Downton Abbey.
Yeah,
not necessarily.
Yeah, something uplifting. Because sometimes it's just really heavy in the evening to be coming home to that.
And so you find that all this true crime, because sometimes writers of novels find it difficult to use the truth in their books because it's too strange. And you have to sort of make it more fictionalized to actually make it believable, because things that go on in life are bizarre, mainly because people are so stupid often. But
Or just strange. I mean, for example, there's a guy named Robert Durst. I'm not sure if you've seen The Jinx, which is a Netflix series. You need to get onto that. You're going to love that. But he killed these people, and then, he was going fine. He was hiding out, and then he was arrested because he tried to steal a chicken sandwich. And you think, if I put that in a book, there is no way people would believe that you were finally brought down because you went to the supermarket and tried to steal a chicken sandwich.
He probably thought, well, I've got away with so much.
Well, they asked him, they said to him, why did you try to steal a chicken sandwich? Like, he's a millionaire as well. As well as being a murderer, he's like one of the big families in New York that owns like all these buildings. And he's like, I just felt like I could get away with it. And
oh, God.
I just did it. You know, he'd been hiding out for months as well. Fascinating.
What kind of world do we live in where you don't get caught for, like, murder, but you can get caught for stealing a chicken sandwich?
I've just been sketching out my next novel, The Chicken Sandwich.
Oh, and the other thing he did, because he was hiding out and he was on the lam, and he thought, if I shave my eyebrows off, I won't look anything like myself, because people, when they don't have any eyebrows, they look strange. So I won't look like myself. So he shaved his eyebrows off.
It's a way to blend in.
I reckon people probably noticed him first off, because they're like, where's that guy's eyebrows? And you leave him at home. And then they're watching him. And then he goes and steals the chicken. He's trying to walk out with a chicken sandwich. What amazing.
A fascinating character.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting stuff.
Thank you very much for coming and talking to us about all the wonderful things we've been talking about. Yeah, it's great to talk about the books and all. You know? They're yeah. great. And you know, James Patterson's cool as well. But the chicken sandwich story was a killer.
The listeners will be telling their friends about that part.
Yeah.
And not
yeah, over the top. Bye, never, never. Bye, never, never. Bye, yeah. never, never. Yeah.
Seriously, though.
Seriously, buy the book. It's a cracking read. And also the book shots, look out for them, because if you haven't got one in your purse or in your knapsack or whatever you carry around, or even in your coat pocket, you're missing out. Because anytime you're bored, you just pull it out and have a quick read. And it is about an hour reading, so it's perfect for a bus trip to work and then bus trip home. Well, thank you very much, Candace.
Thank you for having me. It's been awesome.
And all of Candace's books are available on booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.